Architects, designers, and planners dedicated to distinctive projects for community, life sciences, and workplace clients on the web at www.ratioarchitects.com. Programs on WILL are made possible in part by Krannert Center for the Performing Arts, where families will enjoy performances by mask and storytelling artist Michael Cooper, singers Dan Zanes and Red Grammer, the Sleeping Beauty Ballet, Cirque Elwaz, and the athletic Pilobolis Dancers. Visit KrannertCenter.com for a look at the entire season or contact the ticket office for a season brochure. 800-KCPATIX, 800-527-2849.
This is the Afternoon Magazine on AM 580 and online at WILL.UIUC.edu. Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Quinn. Thanks for tuning in this afternoon. On the program today, it's Computers and You, and we welcome back to the program the science and technology reporter for the News Gazette, Greg Kline. Greg writes two columns for the newspaper about computing. They run on Mondays in the circuit section of the paper. Listeners, you can join us this afternoon with your questions. Here are the telephone numbers in the Champaign-Urbana area. The number is 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, toll free, 800-222-9455. 800-222-WILL. Welcome back.
Thanks, Celeste. It's good to be here.
What can you tell us about the latest worm to be unleashed on Microsoft?
Well, it's more than one.
Yeah, there are variants of it, I guess, what it's all about.
The nasty thing is that evidently it's from a couple of things I've read in the last few days, it's different groups of people that write viruses, worms. And they're challenging each other, and people with Windows 2000 and Windows XP machines in particular that are unpatched are suffering the brunt of their activity, and even some big media folks like CNN and the New York Times
got their
places messed up there. Yeah. So the bottom line is that Microsoft, I think. About a week ago, warned about this vulnerability. They had a patch. So if you got Windows 2000 or you have Windows XP, you need to take care of that. And if you have any other system that's not up to date, it's probably not a bad idea to bring it up to date either, just in case. And a big thing that would have prevented problems for people with this is using a firewall, particularly if you have a persistent internet connection, like you have DSL or cable where you're always on and your computer's always on. If you have a firewall, either a software firewall or some hardware device like a router that has a firewall in it between you and the internet, these things would not have affected you.
Okay.
Unfortunately, a lot of people don't do that. And to refresh folks' memories who might not know, a firewall is just a piece of software or hardware with software in it that essentially makes your computer unviewable, so to speak, from people who are out there on the net probing around looking for computers they can get in and infect with something like this recent spate of worms.
Yeah. Now, Windows 2000, that's different from Millennium, right?
Yes. Windows 2000 was Microsoft's a heavyweight professional system prior to XP Professional. And a lot of the code that underlies XP came from Windows 2000, which is the reason that it's also affected.
Yeah. Now, I would think it would be a really good idea to have your computer set up so that these patches would be installed automatically. Like the one I have here at work, mm-hmm. the computer, when I sign off at the end of the day, it says updates are available to install. Would you like us to update your machine? And then we'll close it down for you.
Right. I think that there's some truth in that. And this is the qualification that I'll put on that. I don't have it turned on mine. I don't have it turned on that you could do it on a Mac too, and I don't have it turned on there either because, you know, the sad truth is that sometimes operating system patches that are supposed to fix things break other things. And sometimes they do it in ways that, you know, are really problematic for people. So I like to, when an operating system update comes out, I kind of like to, you know, wait a day or two and see what kind of early reports are coming in. You can, you know, if you look at news groups and things on the web, you can find out what kinds of experiences people are having with that before I go ahead and install those manually. Now, you know, if you're not the kind of person who is obsessive about this stuff like me, and, you know, you might forget to install those patches, you might well want to have that automatic download and install feature either in Windows or any other operating system turned on so that it does get done.
Okay. We've got a listener waiting to talk with us in Champaign on line one. Good afternoon. Hi.
I have a question about DSL service because I just recently switched from a dial-up service to DSL. And I'm very used to when I get done with my computer either shutting it down or hibernating. And what I wondered is if I leave my computer on and I log off the DSL service, am I still vulnerable?
Let's see. So you're asking essentially if you leave your computer on, but you turn off your DSL modem?
No, not...
Or, oh no, you log...
I just was logging off.
What kind of machine are you using?
It's a laptop. It's a Dell.
What brand?
A Dell.
A Dell, okay. So you're disconnecting from your DSL service.
Yes.
Yeah. No, you should be okay. Because you've cut the your connection there, right?
That's my understanding, yeah.
So you're not always, you know, you're not persistently connected.
Right. I don't want to always be on, or I also don't like having my computer always on. I do tend to hibernate it.
Yeah.
And when I tried that, it blew away. I had to reinstall the whole DSL thing. And I don't know if that was just a peculiarity, but it happened twice, so.
That's odd.
Yeah, I thought it was odd, too. Yeah.
But no, if you sever that connection that way, or if you turn off your computer, or if you shut off your DSL modem, and the same thing kind of with cable, if you shut off the modem or sever the connection, then you're not exposed.
Does that cause any problems with turning off the modem, or is that pretty, should be fairly routine?
No, it shouldn't. You know, some people might tell you that the more you turn things on and off, the sooner they fail, but the failure time is still so long that, you know, you and I will be gone probably before that modem is, right? So you don't really have to worry about that. And in fact, in some senses, it's probably not a bad idea every once in a while to power cycle your DSL or cable modem, you know, turn it on and off, even if you leave it on all the time, just to kind of flush it out.
The other way I was disconnecting from it would be to was going into my network connections and disabling it.
Yeah, that seems like more work than you need to go through.
Okay.
If you just go and tell it to disconnect from your DSL service, you should be okay.
Okay. Thank you very much.
All right.
You're very welcome. Other questions for Greg Klein are invited this afternoon. The number in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, toll-free 800-222-9455. This is the Afternoon Magazine, and this is the third Thursday of the month. And on the third Thursday of the month, we do this program. We take up this topic. We call it Computers in You. And Greg Klein is back with us this month. He is the science and technology reporter for the Champaign-Urbana News Gazette. And we've got another call coming in, a listener in Urbana on line one. Good afternoon.
Hi.
Hi.
You had this program at just the right time. I've got a really strange problem. I have a computer, and my internet provider is Family Video. I have an email account with them. I receive personal email, but when people try to send me things like an e-ticket, minutes from a board meeting. I have a rental business, so when they tried to send me a credit report, none of those things come through, but nor do the senders get an error message saying that mail was undeliverable. When I called Family Video Tech Support, the first line tech supporter didn't know, he checked everything that he could check. Then they were supposed to turn it over to their supervisor. That was about a week ago, and I haven't heard from them. Is there anything I can tell them that you can suggest on why I wouldn't? I don't know that these things are necessarily attachments. The e-ticket from the airline certainly isn't, but consistently I can't get e-tickets at that account, so I have to give them my other account.
Well, this is the two things that I'll say here about this. I'm almost certain that I don't know if I want to say I'm almost certain, but I'm highly suspicious that what's happening is this email service that you've got through Family Video. This is a dial-up service, right?
Yeah.
And do you know who? Family Video probably doesn't run it itself. Do you know? Is there like some other company?
Well, you know, I don't know. But okay. You know, Family Video is the video store people.
Yeah. Yeah.
And all I know is the address is Family Video or Family Video Online.
Right. Now, maybe they have their own online service. I suspect they probably use somebody else's.
I don't know.
And brand it, rather than handle it themselves. But in any event, I suspect that what's happening here is they have a pretty strong filtering system in their computers, okay, which are the server computers that you access to do all this stuff. And it's looking at these things you're not getting and deciding that they're junk email.
Oh, okay.
And it would then you wouldn't get them, okay? And B, nobody would get notified because when you kill off junk email, you really don't want to notify the junk emailer that they sent it to a good email address. So that's a bad
okay.
practice.
Now I can get it at my Yahoo account.
Yeah, and again, I think that's probably because in my experience with Yahoo, I have a Yahoo Mail account as well. They don't have that kind of stringent filtering.
Okay, should I just say to people that are going to send me stuff like that, send it to my Yahoo account, or should I try to fiddle around or is this just something that can't be changed?
Well, I doubt that you're going to talk Family Video into changing it.
Okay.
If it's something you want to make sure you get, you're probably better off having it go to your Yahoo account.
Okay.
Can I ask why you have two accounts?
It's kind of a way of sorting out my mail,
important
stuff from the not so important stuff.
Right, right. That's not unusual at all. Some people, maintain more than one account, and any time they have to give out their email address in a place where they think it might result in junk mail, they give out one address, and, in the other address, they only give out to, people they actually want to communicate with.
Right.
So that's not, that's not an unusual thing
yeah.
at all. The only other thing I could think of is, is if you had set your software to filter this account, but it doesn't sound like you've done anything like that.
Well, when you open a new account like that, you're clicking things, and I'm not sure.
Right.
Usually I check the highest security.
Do you use a web browser to do this?
Uh-huh. Internet Explorer.
Yeah, so it's a webmail system.
Right.
Well, you might go into those settings.
Mm-hmm.
There's probably a place there. I don't know what your webmail system looks like, but there's probably a place there that says, preferences, settings, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
You might go into those, look at any security settings that are there. Typically what these things do is let you set it at various levels. So,
mm-hmm.
There's a high level and maybe two or three medium levels or one medium level and a low level. And if it's set at high, maybe you try it at medium and see if that works for you.
Okay. Well, thank you for your help.
Okay.
You're very welcome. Other questions are invited. 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455. No one waiting at the moment. Well, thinking of email, I have a similar name to someone else on campus, or we share a similar name. And so I get, you know, email that is meant to go to this other individual. Mm-hmm. And I will either forward it to him, or I will do two things. I will forward it to him, and I will send it back to the sender saying, please make a note of this other individual's address. Well, one day I got a message back to me, and it said that my message had been blocked as spam to the originator of the message. And this individual was using something called Spam Cop.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds like it's really a tough cop.
Right. Right. There are, you know, filtering systems, and there are filtering systems, and some of them are more stringent than others. There you've run into an example where I suspect it probably looks at any forwarded mail as being spam, you know, and does away with it. I've seen this, you know, I have certain people that I communicate with in places that have tough spam filters like that, and they won't take forwarded mail, and what I end up doing is just making a new message, you know, so it's not forwarded anymore. Cut the message into a new message and send it to them, and then seem to not have any problems. But I think that's what you're seeing as a result of a server-side filtering system like that.
Yeah. Are there lots of spam blockers out there, and how do you pick one?
Well, you know, in these cases, you don't have any choice because it's the internet provider, whoever's internet service you're going through, that is running this this filtering system at their end, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, in your case, you could work through your email software, which most email software now has ways of making rules to tell it what spam is, or just setting various levels so that it kind of learns by itself what the spam is and either deletes it or shunts it into a junk folder.
Okay. Let's talk with another listener caller in Champaign on line one. Good afternoon.
Hi, how are you? I have a question about just a little tiny piece of hardware. I have a two-line business phone, and I have DSL service. And I need to see if I can find a filter that will keep the DSL from interfering with the telephone line. It just gets horrible static when I have it on.
Did they give you filters when you got your DSL service?
Yeah, but it doesn't work. It's either for the wrong line. It's just a one-line filter, and it doesn't work at all. I've tried going through SBC as the DSL service is from, and I wind up I'm not sure who they tried to get me in touch with, but I wasn't able to to find one, some kind of two-line filter for that. You know anybody who makes them? They don't carry them, it seems, a local computer shop.
No, I don't know that offhand. You know, if you type like two-line DSL filter into Google, you'd probably find something like that.
Okay.
But I'm still interested that you've put these filters on between the jacks in your phone, right?
Right.
And have you just done it in like one location, or done it in every place you have a jack, basically?
I've done it every place I have a jack, and or just unplugged telephones, those other places.
And it's still carrying over, huh?
Yeah, it does. Yeah.
That's interesting. It must have something to do with the two-line situation.
Must have.
Because, you know, I have DSL at home and have everything filtered and have never had any kind of a spillover like that. So it's got to be something related to the two lines.
That's what my son says. So.
He thinks it's two lines?
Something. Well, he has DSL. I mean,
yeah.
And, you know, I've talked to him on the telephone while he's online, and obviously it's just wonderful, but on mine it just makes this horrible. You just can't hear the person on the other end of a telephone conversation.
Yeah.
You have to unplug. So I just I unplug everything, the computer from the wall and from the telephone lines every night. My wife had a modem taken out by a little lightning.
Yeah, that can happen.
Lightning one time, so the only surge protector that works is unplugging it, I think. So.
Well, that absolutely works.
Right.
I can guarantee you that. And I hadn't heard of that DSL interference on two lines, but I'll look into that. And if I find anything good, I'll put it in my column.
Hey, thanks.
Okay.
Thanks for the call. Next, we go to a listener on line two, a caller in Urbana.
Good afternoon.
Hi.
I have a silly question. We moved our computer, which is a Dell Dimension, and it is about, it came out with Windows ME of all things, but it then never gave us any trouble. When we moved, all of a sudden, I cannot put it to sleep anymore, which we used to do. And I also cannot get it to any of the restore. There is no restore point, or it will not let me do any of that. So I can't figure out what could have happened during just moving the computer from one location to another.
Well, yeah, that flabbergasts me too. Moving it. You mean you did unplug it, right?
We moved it from our house to an apartment.
So you unplugged it, packed it up, and took it to the new place, plugged it in, and now it won't go to sleep.
It won't get to your restore points. Give me the restore points. And that's the only thing that seems to be wrong with it. I haven't had any, because of the sleep thing, sometimes the screen goes crazy. Then I have to shut the whole thing down and boot her back up again, and then things work again. So, but I use a virus thing, so I don't think there's any kind of a virus in there.
Well, I don't know why this would have any effect as far as being able to get to your restore points. But, you know, the only thing I could think of, the sleep and the funny screen thing, is in moving, you know, you have a card in there that runs your video, right?
Mm-hmm.
And also puts your monitor to sleep and whatnot. Okay?
Oh, I see.
So maybe you've jogged that loose, and that could be causing some kinds of problems. But I don't think that's the case here.
Uh-huh.
It sounds to me like, you know, if you've got sleep problems and you can't get to your restore points, that sounds to me like a virus thing, you know.
So there is a virus thing, you think?
Well, I think it's possible. That sounds like it's a more likely candidate than something having happened in the move.
Mm.
When's the last time you updated that antivirus software?
All the time. I've got Norton, you know, mm-hmm. Symantica, whatever, the virus scan. And it always gives me automatic updates.
Now, you didn't notice this in at your old place?
No.
And did you notice it right away when you plugged in your computer and set it up at your new
place? Well, when we set it up, yeah, and then I pushed the sleep button. And, it goes to sleep all right, but it won't wake up.
Hmm.
It goes to sleep fine, but then it, you know, then it's like I shut it off without going through this Windows system there.
Right. So you can put it to sleep by pressing the sleep button.
Right.
When you press the button again to wake it up, it doesn't wake up.
No.
And then the other problem you had is you tried to get back to restore point. What happened?
Well, it just gives me this is not available or something like that.
Hmm. Well, this is kind of mysterious.
Yeah, it is. And so what I was thinking is, now this computer is maybe 4 years old, 3 years old. Well, I don't know when XP came out, but it was right before XP was being sold. It was in December when we got the computer, and I think in spring they started with XP.
Mm-hmm.
And I was chicken because things worked so well. I thought, well, I'm not going to buy XP and use it. But now I'm just thinking, would it be safe for me to just go and buy XP and install it, and or would that goof up all the rest of my things? Because my husband is still using WordPerfect, the DOS version. He's used to that, and he doesn't want to change.
I'm not sure how well that would react
with XP.
Yeah. But let me finish up by saying this. I'm not going to be able to solve your problem because it's just it really is kind of mysterious.
Yeah.
But I'll say that it sounds to me that it doesn't really have anything to do with the move.
Uh-huh.
Now, you know, in the process of the move, like I said, you might have jogged loose a component,
uh-huh.
the video card or something else that makes it exhibit this behavior as far as sleep, not sleep, and the monitor flickering. But that shouldn't have anything to do with your restore points.
Uh-huh.
unless you've got some hard drive problem that's been caused by the move. But I can't understand.
I've run everything dutifully the way it's supposed to be mm-hmm. run. You know, make all your files go together, mm-hmm. whatever that thing is called.
Defragmentation.
Yes.
Yeah. And you've run the scan disk to
yes,
check all
disk.
That?
Well, yeah. it always does it when I, when I push the sleep button, and then afterwards it'll always automatically go to scan disk because, it thinks it was shut down illegally.
All right. Well, that's about the best I could tell you at this
okay.
point. I don't think the move has anything to do with it.
Yeah.
I think it's more likely that you've got some kind of software issue there.
Mm-hmm.
And, that behavior of not being able to get to restore points is often the sign of a virus.
Oh, I see. Okay. And just to trying to reinstall now, I do have all the disks for this the CD for this computer, and I was just thinking of if I should reinstall my Windows program.
Mm-hmm.
But then it did say in the instructions, only do it when they tell you to do it. Dell tells you to do it.
Is it a Windows ME disk? I mean, do you have a disk that says Windows ME install?
I am not exactly sure. I haven't looked through the stuff. I have just a whole packet that came with a computer, and because things worked so well, I never even bothered looking at them.
Yeah. The problem is that a lot of times now, instead of giving you an operating system disk, right, or a disk, set of
mm-hmm.
disks that just have the operating system on that you could run them to do kind of a repair job, right? Give you is a set of restore disks that will restore your computer to its factory condition, okay? So you'd be, by running those, you'd be wiping out everything you've got on there.
Like formatting it?
No, it'd take it back to the state it was in when you took it out of the box. Yeah.
Then I would have to reinstall every program I'm using.
Right, and you'd need to have backed up all your documents and that kind of thing. If that's what this is, a set of recovery disks,
yeah.
as opposed to having a set of separate operating system disks that you could use.
So I'd have to look at that. Well, thank you very much for... I have no idea what this is.
Okay, it's just a mysterious problem because...
I've never... Because it used to have some restore points in there. And
right.
when I added a new program, I could... If something went wrong, I could always go
right.
back to
Sounds like you've been doing just the right thing. So, but a hardware issue from your move shouldn't have done anything to those restore points.
Mm-hmm.
So that leads me to believe it's a software issue.
Okay.
It's either an operating system problem that's developed or, as I said, a symptom of a virus.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Okay.
Bye.
You're welcome. This is the Afternoon Magazine. My name is Celeste Quinn, and it's Computers in You. Here today on the Afternoon Magazine, this is a topic we take up once a month on the third Thursday of the month. Our guest this month, Greg Klein, science and technology reporter for the Champaign-Urbana News Gazette. Listeners, you can join us this afternoon with your questions about computers. The number in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455. 800-222-WILL. We've got a listener joining us here in just a moment. Surge protector. Someone mentioned a call back, I think. The issue of, we get strong storms in mm-hmm. this part of the country. Do you recommend people that you recommend that they have a surge protector?
Right, absolutely. Although that gentleman was also correct that, it's not an absolute protection. So when there's a lightning storm around here, and it's in proximity, and the old trick about the lightning flashes and then you count 1,000, 2,000, and that tells you how far away. When the thunder sounds, that tells you how far away it is, blah, blah, blah. But if it's close by, if there's a lightning storm in my general area, my computers go off, and if I'm home, I unplug them, right? Because that's the only way to be absolutely certain that you're not going to that you're not going to get a problem. But, you know, if you have a good surge protector, and you should have a good surge protector, and by that I mean you should buy one that is rated well in joules, and it shouldn't be the, you know, the $10 surge protector that you can get. It should be a legitimate one that has something like, you know, 1,000, 2,700, 3,500 joule protection. So, and you should plug not only your computers, but as I think he mentioned, his wife had a modem burned out. There now, any good surge protector has a place to plug your modem in and out to, and also your DSL or cable modem in and out to, and you should use that feature as well. Okay. But it's not absolute protection.
Right. Okay. Let's talk with another listener caller on line one in Rantoul. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, and thank you for taking my call. All these previous callers are so knowledgeable. They're going to make me sound like the rank amateur that I am. I try to email my daughter, who is in the Corps of Engineers. So this is hers is a military computer. I had no problem when she was in Southern Illinois, and even when she was in Iraq, I could email her with no problem at all. Now she's back in another part of the state, but my emails come back as an error. I have Soltech. And I've talked to them, and they say there's no reason, they can see no reason why my emails should not go through.
And
hers come through to me, okay, but I have to route mine to my son. So.
So, you're sending email to her. She's on a base, right?
She's at the Corps of Engineers. It's an office, really.
In an office, okay.
Yeah, but it is military.
And your emails are getting sent back, and what do they say?
They say that's an error.
Undeliverable?
Yes.
Well, good question. Again, I think it might be running into whatever kind of filtering system they use there.
Mm-hmm.
And for some reason, it doesn't like your Soltech account.
How come it does now and it didn't before?
Well, before she was in different places, right?
Right. Oh, right.
So you're not running into the same server with the same kind of filtering going on.
Okay.
And from your son, it works, huh?
Well, he's in a big office, and so
it just sounds to me like now she's in a place where they have a filtering system, and for some reason that system doesn't like your Soltech email.
Well, shucks. Okay. So, now this is really going to
I can't see any other reason why that would happen. You know, yeah. Your email, when you send it to other people, it's all fine,
no problem.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. It's got to be at her end, and I would suspect a filtering system.
Okay. One other quick question. This is really going to sound. My son has said something about I need to defrag, and the last lady mentioned that.
Uh-huh.
How do I do that? Is that a long, involved process?
No, not really. Do you have what kind of a?
I have Windows 95.
Windows 95.
And I'm very happy with it.
You know,
I don't want to go to anything more complicated.
You can even defragment with Windows 95, and if you go to Start Programs, Accessories, System Tools.
Okay, I'm trying to write fast here. So.
Okay, just it should be under Start.
Yeah.
Programs.
Okay.
Accessories.
Yeah. Okay.
System Tools.
Yeah. Got that.
And in that System Tools directory folder, you should see a little program icon that says Disk Defragmenter.
It will say that.
Yeah.
Okay.
And if you call that up and run it, then
it will do it for me.
That'll do it for you, yeah.
Okay, great. All right. Thank you so much for help.
You're very welcome. Let's talk with another listener. Caller on line 4 in Eureka. Hi.
Hi, good afternoon. Two quick questions, please.
Sure.
You were talking just a few minutes ago about a surge protector and the rating in joules. Could you give, in your opinion, the minimum number that you need for protection for your computer?
Well, and you're just getting my opinion here, and
I
want to tell you right off, I'm not an electrician. So, but, you know, I want something that's got 1,000, 1,200, you know, at the bottom end and higher than that if I can get it, right?
Uh-huh.
I don't want to buy something that – I don't want to buy your $5 or $10 surge protector that has a little or no,
uh-huh.
You know, that has that has 200 or 300 or 400 or something like that.
So minimum number would be 1,000 to 1,200 in your opinion?
Yeah, something
– For adequate protection.
From 1,000 to 1,200 up.
Okay. Second question, I have a compact computer. I think it's a 1999 or 2000 with 1995 and 98 Windows. I know you went through it at the top of the hour. Could you just repeat maybe what one would need in terms of virus protection? I have a dial-up internet provider.
Okay.
Dial-up access.
Right. The issue of whether you have a dial-up or a persistent internet connection like DSL or cable doesn't really have anything to do with protecting yourself from viruses. It has more to do with people probing your computer, and that's where I was talking about you should have a firewall. Everybody, if you're connected to the internet at all, or you even get disks from people, CDs, and anybody who's still using floppy disks, and stick them in your computer, and you don't know exactly where they came from and what might be on them. Everybody should have virus protection software running on their computer.
And you said a firewall is essentially a piece of software?
Well, in either configuration, it really has to do with software, but some firewall, Windows XP, for example, or Mac OS X, they have built-in software firewalls. But if you use, for example, a router between your computer and the internet, or your computer and your cable or DSL modem, that router may have a firewall built into it as well.
Uh-huh.
In which case, you wouldn't necessarily need to use the Windows XP or Mac OS X.
What if it doesn't? What kind of software would you recommend?
We're on a Windows machine again, right?
Yes.
And you want to? What I would recommend is a piece of software called Zone Alarm. Okay.
Zone Alarm.
Alarm. You can get a free version of it. I'm going to try and run the URL here for you real fast.
Okay.
And tell you what it is. I think it's www.zonelabs.com.
ZoneLabs.com.
Zone
and then
Labs.
You can download a free version of it.
Right. They have a free version of their software, their firewall, Zone Alarm, that works on Windows machines and is a great little firewall.
Okay. And you, again, were advocating updating virus protection. The one you recommend the most?
Virus protection software?
Yeah.
Well, I think any of the – I'm not really going to recommend a brand, but you know you could tell what the big ones are, right?
Yeah. I think I have one of the big ones you've talked
about. Yeah. Any of those big ones I think are fine, and there are some alternatives to them, but any significant player in the virus protection software market –
And I guess I haven't done it, but this is probably a should for me. You should subscribe to their service for the updates.
Most assuredly, yeah.
Okay.
Because those, those definitions, as they're called, are what catch the viruses. You know, they look for certain strings of code to tell whether it's a virus or not.
Yes.
And, viruses are constantly changing. So if you don't keep those definitions up to date, in essence, your software isn't seeing those new viruses.
It just came to me. I have the Norton. Would you happen to have the Norton website address?
I think that's www.symantec.
SYMANTEC.com.
SYMANTEC. Symantec.
Okay.
SYMANTEC.
Okay. .com?
.com.
Okay. Thank you very much, sir.
Mm-hmm.
Bye. Next, we go to a listener in Charleston on line two. Hi.
Oh, hi. I was calling in about that lady that was having problems with her computer up and down and up and down,
The lady who had moved her computer?
Yes.
Did
she not say she has Windows ME?
Yes.
It might be her Windows ME.
Right. Right.
And I didn't hear you say that.
No, I said it sounded to me like an operating system or virus problem.
Because
Windows ME being our operating system. And, Windows ME was a problematic version of Windows.
Windows ME was a piece of garbage.
Yeah.
I had Windows ME on a computer. It crashed once. It kept trying to crash again. Finally, just last weekend, I had Windows 2000 loaded on it, and I'm shipping it overseas as a donation. But, it was awful.
Right.
I had trouble with that thing from the time I'd owned it about 8 months until I stopped using it. So I think Windows M, anyone who has Windows ME and starts to have any sort of problem should change their operating system.
Right.
You can buy Windows 2000 for less than $100.
Right.
So, I like Windows 2000. I don't have it right now because you hate to go backwards on your operating system. But I really liked 2000 Professional.
Well, thanks for the recommendation.
Okay.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, if I didn't make it clear enough, let me say that again in case the lady is still listening. I think it's probably related to an operating system problem or a virus problem. Now, software as opposed to something that happened to her computer hardware when she was moving. Again, the problem in her case with updating to Windows XP, which I would normally tell someone to do who was running Windows ME, is that her husband wants to use a DOS version mm-hmm. of WordPerfect.
WordPerfect.
And I don't know offhand and would need to look up, and she ought to look up if she's going to contemplate that step, how well that DOS version of WordPerfect will go with Windows XP.
Okay. Next, we're going to go to a listener in Urbana on line one. Hi.
Hi. I just wanted to say that you can also get, in addition to plug-in surge protectors, you can also get a whole house surge protector
mm-hmm.
that an electrician installs at the meter. And it helps protect everything in the house from outside surges. Nothing will stop a big lightning surge.
Exactly. Right?
If the transformer goes out in your neighborhood, if your power line falls off, that's what happened to us. It became, our power line became disengaged from the power pole, and we had sparks all over the place, and I'm sure there was a surge. But it would also protect your refrigerator, your TV, and all this kind of stuff from these surges that come across the line. And the ones that you can buy that you plug in would then, in addition, protect from surges that occur that are generated inside the house.
Right. And with as much electronics as we have in our houses anymore, that's not a bad idea.
Our power company offered these quite a number of years ago, and I got one then. They don't offer them anymore, but I would imagine that an electrician could buy one and install it for you. I'm not sure how you figure out which one to use, but I just wanted to recommend it. Thanks a bunch.
Thank you.
And let's see if we can get one more call in here this afternoon. I think we're going to go to line three. Person on a cell phone. Good afternoon.
Hi. I just wanted to make four very quick comments on surge protectors. I got the Illinois Power full house surge protector, and years later, I spoke to Illinois Power, and they said they're useless. It's a very big investment, and you won't get anything out of it. The second thing to tell people is when you get a power strip, which has that nice little red light, that's not a surge protector. That light doesn't tell you whether you're getting a surge or not. The third thing is be careful with a surge protector. Try to get one that has a green light that tells you whether the outlet is grounded. I had, for 10 years, $50,000 worth of electronic equipment going through a surge protector into an outlet that didn't have a ground. And it wasn't until I got another trip light surge protector that I found out that it was an ungrounded outlet. So you want to be careful about that. And the last thing is Macs are less thickly power books than iBooks, are much less prone to surge protection problems. And the last thing is that the bigger problem is not the surge you get. It's when your power has gone off and you're coming back online because you're not getting the full power coming through. So once you've had a power outage, when the power comes back on, you might want to wait a little while before you start using your electronics again so that you can get a stable current going through. So I just wanted to add that. Thank you.
All right, good.
Okay.
Now, that was a lot of advice there, and good advice, and I'll simplify it, okay? I'm looking at, I called up on Google here, some stats for good surge protectors. So what you want to do is every surge protector will tell you, A, that it's a surge protector, not a power strip, as he was correctly saying. And that's when I say don't buy a $5 or $10 surge protector. I'd probably be more accurate in saying don't buy a $5 or $10 power strip, because that's what it is. It's not really a surge protector. But these good surge protectors are all the ones I'm looking at are 2,775 joules and above, okay? And they're going to cost you $50 or $60. So those are the two things. If you walk into the store, look for a surge protector that has that joule rating of you know, I'll just say for the sake of simplicity, 2,500 or above, and cost you about $50. And if you buy those, then you're going to get the things that that gentleman was talking about, including a monitoring light that tells you whether it's grounded or not and that kind of thing.
Okay, very good.
And as far as, you know, Max being less susceptible, I don't know. But all I know is my Max plugged into a surge protector, and I suggest that no matter what kind of computer you have, you ought to have a surge protector between it and your power source.
Okay. There we have to leave it. We're out of time. Greg, thanks so much for joining us
this afternoon.
Greg Klein, science and technology reporter for the News Gazette. And we'll do another Computers in You program next month in September on the third Thursday of the month. It's 8 minutes before 2 o'clock. Settlement prices in from the Chicago Board of Trade. Here's Todd Gleason.
Let's see you right back, Doug.
Todd?
Yeah.
Are you there?
I am.
You're live.
I was talking to somebody else. That's okay. I'm sorry about that. So let's talk about what's happening at the Chicago Board of Trade. You know, it was just a good morning this morning. I'm happy I was talking to Dave Dickey here, who is the director of Ag Programming. We were sharing some things about the Board of Trade and what things are hopping here, and about Agronomy Day on the South Farms this morning. Of course, I was out there calling wagons out into the South Farms research plots and just having a ball doing my job today, and I'm happy as a camper. And things at the Chicago Board of Trade, well, they're not quite that good. The beans were down 3 to 5 cents for the day. Corn off a penny. The wheat, on the other hand, was up about 6.5 cents. That, in fact, the case in the nearby September contract at 320 and three quarters. The high, that was a settlement price, up 6.5 cents. The high for the day in the September wheat at 321, the low at 316.5, and a settlement price at 320 and three quarters, up 6.5 for the day. December futures, 336, the high, the low at 331, settlement price 335.5, up 6.25, and the March contract 348.25, the high, the low at 343.5. Settlement price at $3.48, up 6.25. May futures, 354, the high, the low at 51.5, and a settlement price at 354. They were up 6 on the day. And July futures, 355.5, the high, the low at 353. Settlement price at $3.54 and three quarters. They were up a nickel for the day. From the corn pit, September contract, 214.5 on the high, the low at 211. Settlement price there at $2.11 and a quarter cents. Down a penny and 3 quarters for the SEP corn. December futures off 1 and 3 quarters. 228 the high, the low at 224.5. Settlement price at 224 and three quarters. It again was down a penny and 3 quarters for the day. March futures 237 and three quarters, the high, the low at 234. Settlement price at 234.5, down a penny and 3 quarters. The May futures 243.5 the high, low at 240.5. Settlement price at 240 and three quarters, down 1.5. July contract in the corn pit $2.48 the high, the low at 245. Settlement price at 245 and a quarter, down a penny and a half. In the September futures, 250 and a quarter, the high, the low at $2.48. Settled on that low at 248, unchanged on the day. September oats, down a penny and a quarter today, 153 the high, the low at 49. Settlement price at $1.50 and a half. Once again, it was down 1 and a quarter. December futures, down a penny and a half at 158 and three quarters. The high at $1.61 and three quarters, and these oats had a low of 157 today. The settlement again at $1.58 and three quarters, down 1.5. Now the soy complex, soybean, September futures. They were off a nickel and a quarter today. 618 the high, the low at 609.5. Settlement price 609 and three quarters, down 5.25. November futures 628 the high, low at 619.5. Settlement price at 620 and a quarter, down 4.5 cents. In the January futures, 634 the high, the low at $6.26.5. Settlement price at 627. They were down 4.5 for the day in the March contract to 637.5 high, low at 631. Settlement price 633, down a penny and a quarter for the day. May contract in the bean pit, 640 the high, the low at 633. Settlement price at 634.5, down 3.5 in July. Soybeans were down 3.5 as well. 643.5 the high, the low at 36.5. And a settlement price at $6.38 today for the July soybeans next year. They were off 3.5 cents. September bean meal, $1.90. The settlement price there down 70 with a high of 93.30 and a low at 190.80 for the day. And the October contract at 193.70 high, the low at 190.90. Settlement price at 191.20. They were down 30 for the day. Bean oil September futures off 9, 22.51 the high. And the, or rather, 22.51, the settlement, the high at 22.73, the low at 22.44. October bean oil, 22.83, the high, the low at 22.54, and a settlement price at 22.62. They were down a nickel for the day. Coming up during the closing market report very quickly, we'll talk with Dan Zwicker about the commodity markets. We'll get an update from Congressman Tim Johnson. He's the only House of Representatives congressman from the state of Illinois that sits on the Ag Committee, and he'll update us on the legislative agenda there in Washington, D.C., and what has been accomplished and not accomplished in this recent session. So that happening during the closing market report this afternoon. Now, here's Celeste Quinn with the Mercantile Exchange numbers.
Okay, Todd, let's take a look at what happened today on the Merc. August feeder cattle, the high 110.40, the low 110 even, the settlement 110.37.5, that up 12.5. September 108.60, the high 107.20, the low, the settlement 108.55, that up 92.5. October 107.15, the high 105.77.5, the low 107.05, the settlement, that up 72.5. August live cattle, 79.85, the high. The low, 78.57.5. The settlement, 79.77.5. That up 62.5. October live cattle, 80.92.5, the high. 79.75, the low. 80.75, the settlement. That up 35. October lean hog, 61.52.5, the high. 60.85, the low. 61.32.5, the settlement. That up 30. December lean hogs, 59 even, the high, 58.25, the low, the settlement, 58.55, that down 35. February, 60.12.5, the high, 59.50, the low, 60 even, the settlement, that down 12.5. April lean hogs, 60 even, the high, 59.60, the low, the settlement, 59.67.5, that finishing down 47.5. August pork bellies, the high today, 72 even, the low, 70 even, the settlement, 70.85, that up 10 cents. And on Wall Street, let's take a look at the Dow. It is currently up 15 points at 10,566, the NASDAQ off 8 at 2137, and the S&P 500 down a point at 1220.
Agricultural information is made possible with support from ADM, helping to create a storehouse of possibilities and products from a single seed. ADM, resourceful by nature.
It's time once again to Ask Dr. Science. So let's ask Dr. Science.
That's me.
Remember, he knows more than you do.
That's right.
Rafael Garcia from Chula Vista, California wants to know, Dear Dr. Science, why do they lock gas station bathrooms?